Good day, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. We have Margriet de Villiers in the studio, and we're going to chat a bit more about academic integrity. This is Alzette Leroux.
And Anne-Lee Adendorf.
Let's talk transformative assessment. Margriet, welcome. Margriet de Villiers, an advisor at the Center for Learning Technologies at Stellenbosch University. And a warm welcome to you in the studio.
Thank you, Alzette. Thank you, Anne-Lee.
Welcome.
Margriet, so very serious topic, academic integrity. Now, the question always remains, what is academic integrity? Or perhaps before we get there, maybe just some context. How did this end up on your table?
Okay.
What's the link between Margriet and academic integrity? Yeah?
That's a good question, because it is a very serious topic. But I think it should land on everyone's table.
Yeah.
But then I'm biased because I do enjoy talking about this topic. And I think it came out of my experience as a student as well, especially in the field that I studied, which was theology. It's very, you know, they try and cultivate a sense of critical thinking and working with resources and sources and finding your own voice. And throughout that experience, I realized myself as a novice theologian, I didn't really have the words or the way in which to engage in that field. And I think that's true for many students in whatever area they find themselves. So part of that critical thinking and getting to that point of what do I bring to the table, the concept of what are we doing here kept coming up for me as a student. So what are we trying to do here? Is it just regurgitation? Am I being formed to go into a very specific type or line of work? And throughout all of that, the term academic integrity came out, because academic integrity is a set of values that really does look at how do we go about looking at knowledge sources. How do we go about thinking? What do we bring to these knowledge sources? So I think that's where it came out for me, is that everything that we're doing here at a higher education institution is academic integrity, and it's the core. Mm. And I find that no matter what I do, my head comes back to academic integrity. I just find a golden thread back to that. So I am by no means what I would say expert or an expert in anything, basically, because that word is also a bit difficult for me. But I do think I've walked a bit of an experience path with academic integrity. And one of the things that also really pushed me when I started teaching, so as a tutor/lecturer at theology with first years, was that if you can get them to understand the concept of what we are doing here and what academic integrity is, then a lot of other things fall in place for them when they look at things like their module framework and why certain material is prescribed or not prescribed. Why an assessment is done in the way that it's done, then I also start to critically think about what do they bring and how do they then take this knowledge into the world outside. I think that's how it's always kind of been part of my milieu. So it links in with critical thinking, and I think I've found a way of getting a golden thread to it in everything I do. Also, when we look at learning technologies, and that is my specific field currently.
I almost hear something about context, that very important why question that we have journeyed in several podcasts in this series as well. So context, the why question, and then something that also springs to mind is responsibility and ownership. Mm. Almost like taking ownership and responsibility for your learning, for your being here, for your embarking in this journey at a higher education institution.
It's everyone's business. And that's the thing, is it's academic integrity is not something that's only for the lecturer to take responsibility for, or only the student or the policymakers. Academic integrity is for all of us. And that's why it's about taking ownership in that sense of what you are doing and what you are engaging with.
I think, Mahrit, until recently, our academic integrity, or the first question, let me start in a different place, that might have come to mind is learning technologies and academic integrity. How do those two link? I think we don't need to ask that question anymore since generative AI came onto the scene. But what I found interesting in looking at directions around academic integrity, specifically with that topic, is how it's often defined in terms of what not to do.
Exactly.
Rather than in terms of what to do. Mm. So if you were to explain to a student what academic integrity is.
That's a good point. So when I try to explain academic integrity to myself, I always look at it from two perspectives. You can go punitive, which I think we generally do, because the first thing, and that makes total sense. If you look at us as human beings, we need structure and we want structure. So when I want to assist a student in getting to an endpoint, I'm going to say, here's your map. And part of that map is the policy and guidelines on something like academic integrity. Except we call it a plagiarism policy. So already that has the punitive aspect to it. And it already, I mean, it already invokes that the idea, as you mentioned, of misconduct, of what not to do. Just don't commit plagiarism or cheat, which once again, I mean, we can go down a whole rabbit hole on cheating and plagiarism and what that means within an academic integrity context. But then I also try and explain or think to myself, but what does cheating mean? What does plagiarism mean? Also in this world in which we found ourselves, where we do have access to the internet, we are looking at OERs and OEPs, so open educational resources and open educational practices, because we do feel that knowledge should be accessible. It's not an elitist game anymore, or should not be. So what then comes out of that is to say, but okay, but now I have all of these resources, but they are in languages, literally like academic languages, I don't understand, content fields I don't understand. And now you're expecting me to also use sources and integrate all of these different sources into a new idea, and I have to reference it. So already it becomes a skill and a new skill set and a kind of a new academic language. So except for the punitive side that there is when we talk about a definition of academic integrity, and I will get to the definition, but the other side is in the education, that it has to be about how do I enable whomever. And this, and I want to say this very loudly and very pertinently, this also counts towards lecturers and researchers. We forget, because you have done this for so long, you forget that this was a skill that you had to learn. And that same skill that you had to learn is now something that needs to be conveyed in another manner to your students. So before we get to the definition, I just think we should keep those two legs in mind. So the punitive and the educational, and both are important. So especially for us, when you're looking at a strategic perspective, you do need the punitive aspect. We do need the guidelines. We do need the policies, because we do need to hold ourselves and our students accountable. But then we also need to enable education in that aspect. And we put a lot of work into helping researchers, but not necessarily the same amount of work goes into helping our students become better researchers. So there is a bit of a, if I can say, type of dissonance there. So keeping that in mind, a definition is difficult. There are wonderful definitions on the, for instance, the International Center for Academic Integrity has fantastic definitions. It's also a nice source to go and look at for some student perspectives on definitions. But then I absolutely love this very simplified definition, and it's from the Exemplary Academic Integrity Project. So they have this academic integrity toolkit. It was created by the University of Southern Australia. And for those who have read a bit about academic integrity will know the authors are Mahmoud, and I'm speaking under correction, but I think it's Begat. Either way, the Exemplary Academic Integrity Project have given a very straightforward definition. And I think this encompasses both sides quite well. And I'd like to just read it for us because I think it touches upon a lot of what we've said. Academic integrity means acting with the values, that's a key word there, values of honesty, trust, fairness, respect, and responsibility in learning, teaching, and research. It is important for students, teachers, researchers, and professional staff to act in an honest way, be responsible for their actions, and show fairness in every part of their work. All students and staff should be an example to others of how to act with integrity in their study and work. Academic integrity is important for an individual's and a school's reputation. So without specifically mentioning policies and regulations and do's and don'ts, it is addressing very subtly that this is about how you go about as a person in the world and then a person in the world of higher education. So I like that definition because it also touches well upon our ideas of graduate attributes at the university. And then once again, it moves a bit further away from punitive because it focuses on values. And the question is, who am I within the world of higher education?
I really like that definition as well because it focuses on values. And I think it looking at academic integrity from that angle as opposed to looking at it as a practice, because I think a lot of our attempts to bring it across makes it look like it's just something you do, but it needs to come from inside.
And of course, I mean, it is a practice, but you cannot practice something that you don't necessarily understand. Then it just becomes an exercise in futility, where a student is just continuously making sure that they're referencing correctly or citing ChatGPT correctly, but they don't understand why they are doing this.
And that's the absolutely critical part, I think. Also for it not to be just a compliance exercise, but exactly on that point, because what you made me think about is a lot of the issues we might be picking up with what looks like plagiarism comes from learning to speak this academic language. You mentioned that we all struggle to learn how to put forward an idea, how to write, how to cite, how to reference. And as I looked at what people were doing in this field around guidelines, I found it so interesting to come across infographics that sort of helped you understand when it was plagiarism and what kind of plagiarism and why. And I thought, my goodness me, this is so simple that helps you a lot. And in addition to that, Chrissy Bowie, when she spoke to you earlier, speaking about being in higher education as learning to make knowledge claims. Exactly. And then that helps you understand why we have this emphasis on referencing and things like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So one thing that you've mentioned, Magriet, is almost this two legs. It can be an educational way of viewing it or a punitive way of viewing it. And that made me think of the one podcast we had with Alison Militois pertaining to university culture and that's almost like the undercurrent in the culture of an institution bubbles to the fore in the wordings of our policies. And I'm wondering to myself if we have the policies framing it in a punitive way, isn't that part of that which should transform in maybe thinking it differently in education, in guidance, in that way, you know, channeling it back into learning focused and the educational purpose, really, instead of saying what not to do. And yes, there are guidelines. Don't put your hand on the warm stove.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's otherwise you will get burned.
Yeah.
So yes, good guidance in that.
Yeah.
But you can, you can also channel it in a different, in an educating way.
Yes.
Like you mentioned, as a researcher, we are researchers. We often forgot how we got there, and those literacies or language or skills became a part of us. And then sometimes we forget that students have to learn that from the word go. So maybe part of the that which academic integrity or viewing academic integrity can help transform assessment would also be in the way we perceive it. And, you know, instead of a punitive direction, rather take an educational direction and then put that in the wordings of our policies.
Absolutely.
Have that filter in.
Speaking of the assessment practices, because I also want to touch that we touch upon a bit on policies and guidelines, because they're not to be scrapped.
Yeah.
You know. But a very interesting article by Morris. I actually wrote this source's name down. So the title is Evaluating a Pedagogical Approach to Promoting Academic Integrity in Higher Education, an Online Induction Program. So where they looked at how can we equip students from the get-go with these physical practices, but also the mentality of the values. And one of the things, so they have five things, determining academic integrity strategy, which is more for your university, but also for all faculties. And we can touch upon the difference between the university strategy and the faculty strategy. But then also reviewing your institutional policy, understanding students, which is a whole other ball game.
It's a science in itself.
Exactly. And then good guidelines for staff, okay? But the other thing that they say that really comes out, and this makes so much sense if we think about this, is revisiting assessment practices. And this keeps coming up the whole time because it once again asks the question, what are we doing here? And when we are assessing something, the question also comes up, what are we doing there? What are we trying to assess? How are we trying to assess? What do we want the student to show? Because we can ask them to just regurgitate. Then they are basically a human ChatGPT. We all know that can be done. I really hope that my past lecturers at theology didn't listen to this, but I was a genius at regurgitation. And as an adult, I still struggle with finding my own critical voice.
Yeah.
So I can easily give you a good layout of the pros and the cons, but it's still something that's never been cultivated or opened up in me to have the, maybe it's the self-confidence, but also to realize that you have enough knowledge to make a knowledge claim, albeit a very temporary knowledge claim that you might change, hopefully, because they do need to change. But it comes back to that, what are you trying to do here? What are we trying to do? And revising our assessment strategies is really key. So we revise them not with the idea that it should become easier for a student to waffle or easy for a student to pass or that the key concepts and threshold concepts are not touched upon. That's not what is meant here. It is just so that the authentic knowledge claim that the student wants to make can come through in the assessment. So yeah, revising assessment practices is very important. It's difficult.
It's almost something that springs to mind is that you touched on the values, right? Mm. And I'm thinking maybe it's time to assess with integrity instead of putting the ball in there and say, students must answer with integrity.
Yeah.
Assess with integrity.
Yeah, that's absolutely critical. We had that discussion yesterday. So we spoke about what would be principles by which you write guidelines on academic integrity. And one of my colleagues in the Center for Teaching and Learning immediately said, but you can't just have these principles applying to students. They should apply equally to the academics designing the assessments. Mm-hmm. And that's very true. So we rewrote it to do that. But that's the other conversation. To some degree, it is our assessment practices that lead to. I mean, if we're honest about this, there are two other things we need to keep in mind, or honest is maybe not the right word, but the penny dropped for me when I understood that we can't cultivate honest behavior by trying to catch out dishonesty or forcing people to be honest. That comes from deeper inside. Mm. So that's one side of it. And it won't help for us to say, oh, but students never plan to cheat, then we wouldn't have papers on pay to pass and SMLs and all those kinds of things. So that exists out there. And that's why we have policies and we have punitive measures. But we're also not going to cultivate integrity by just focusing on catching out people. So yeah, that's so. And then in terms of knowledge claims having to change, mine on this topic has changed substantially over the past decade from coming from a very punitive position to then having that penny drop and understand, oh, wait a minute, that's not cultivating integrity. Yeah. That's just preventing cheating. And my assessment system, especially over-assessment or unfair expectations or not communicating clearly enough what my expectations are, might all lead to what we perceive as academic misconduct in students or irregularities in practice or whatever we want to call it.
And that also touches upon the aspects of graduate attributes. Because one of the things I know in my life, I know very few people who are really always on top of things. Everything is always handed in at the right time. Everything is wonderfully done. I have a few of those people. I admire them. And I wish they could write a book or make a podcast on how to do this, that I could actually do it.
And you can send the detail. We can make that in a podcast.
And, you know, the question of how to be more efficient and more effective, hustle culture, you know, there's value in that. We all want to be, because if you like what you're doing or if you find it valuable to society, then that's where you find a lot of your personal, let's say, oomph, you know, your impetus to do what you do. But for a student who is already in a whole different world that is campus, that is learning a whole different language that is academic language, whilst also conversing in other languages that they don't understand, whilst also having a social life, which is just as important for an holistic, you know, well-rounded individual as our graduates should be. So we often say, you know, but they know what is expected of them from assessments. They know when the due date is. And one of the things that we're trying to cultivate also is the sense of time management, but it's also this realization that sometimes time management is not enough. It is true, and I think we can all as, let's say, adults, not that students are not adults, but just as a differentiation point, that even with good time management, you cannot reach everything always with the same amount of efficiency, effectiveness, and critical deep underpinning. So what inevitably happens is that a student is going to deliver something that's a bit more surface level. And sometimes that's okay. But a student is also sometimes going to look for something to help them get to the goalpost, whether that be whatever that may be. And inherently, there is nothing wrong in trying to do that. I mean, everyone is now aware of all the AI discussions and specifically ChatGPT. I always played with it simply from an educational perspective to understand what students see and how useful it can be in that side of my work. But I never actually thought of using it to make my life easier. Now I've actually used it to kind of plan myself a routine during the day using other tools I've used to say, what are my peak hours? So I thought, that's amazing. So if I can use something like that in my personal life, what is so wrong with a student wanting to get to the goalpost or this academic endpoint, but needing a little bit of support to do that effectively? And then sometimes that means they will use some things or do some things that seem to be on a level of dishonesty. So not necessarily dishonest, but on a level or trajectory or spectrum of dishonesty. But why would that be a bad thing for a student to do? Because part of the graduate attributes is that we also want to teach them how to manage their time, be dynamic professionals as a problem solver. This is a problem. So finding things that help them solve it. The other thing I also want to mention is we have fantastic resources at Stellenbosch, and we just need to get our students there. So this idea that students are always cheating or never cheating. We know that that is, I mean, come on. Enough said.
Well, you can call it creative, finding creative ways to a different result.
but they all fall in the spectrum somewhere in between. And then we need to equip them with the tools. And we are very lucky that we have that. And the things that our library system is amazing. And our librarians are amazing when it comes to the practicalities. Our language center is amazing at helping our students grapple with reading and writing concepts. We just need, from our side as, let's say, the academic or the lecturer, to also give a little bit of leeway for them in a certain extent to play with the content and be able to ask questions about things they don't understand, because the academic, let's call it dishonesty or whatever, may come in more generally, not in that they cannot reference, because those practical things can be learned, but it's because they don't understand the academic content and they don't feel they have a space to ask those questions. So I must say, you know, I'm wandering off your point, Anneli, but I'm very cautious to say that, you know, our students are always honest. Let's look at ourselves in this room and say, are we always honest? I mean, that's not human nature. So of course they're not. They are also just like us, looking for a way to make their life easier. What we are aiming to do is to give them the opportunities to find ways to breed these dynamic professionals that are problem solvers. But we still want them to understand that problem solving as a dynamic professional does not mean that you can be dishonest in the way in which you solved your problem. I hope that makes sense.
It boils down to those values again.
Yes.
So, interesting, I read this week, it was just a random post. Somebody said, you cannot solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that the problem arises.
Yes.
So, you know, it almost reminds me, if the problem is, so for instance, timelines and or over-assessing, and part of the problem is I need to obtain a certain mark, and that mark says something about me. If that's the problem, then students could divert to all sorts of different solutions to that problem. And some of them might entail the root of not valuing your responsibility to take responsibility. And or is that perhaps just students portraying back at you the way that my assessment is asking of them? Is it not perhaps a way of regurgitation? Is that not, for me as a lecturer, if, for example, when I was teaching constitutional law at a different institution, I one time drafted a question, an assignment question, and part of it was a third year subject that I taught. And so by that time, students in their third year, although I walk a path with them to just reaffirm how do we, you know, go about incorporating resources in your academic writing, etc. Then I received this assignment back, and one of the students basically copy and pasted the textbook and the answer from the textbook. And yes, on the one side, I could have gone and say, no, zero marks, and now we're going to go the disciplinary route because this is clear plagiarism and it's not your work. And he's like, yeah, but he gave acknowledgement to the author of the textbook. I mean, he cited it beautifully and that which he copy and pasted. But what the feedback I received from that was, ooh, LZ, there is something seriously wrong with my assessment. And I had to go back to the drawing board and reimagine and redesign and replan the way that I assess the students. Because clearly the feedback I actually got was, okay, LZ, I'm just asking them to robot back to me.
You know, because, and I think that is a very natural thing that happens in many places. I myself as a student, thank goodness, turn it in, which is a whole other topic we can chat about if you guys like. But I was studying in the era before Turnitin, but obviously lecturers are not pawpaws, you know, as a colleague of mine likes to say. They could easily spot that I was simply regurgitating. But then the question is why? And many times students would say to me, but ma'am, I cannot say it better than this person is saying it. That's why you prescribed this book. Well, I cannot say it better than that source I got. I don't know how to verbalize this in another way. And then to have to explain to them, you don't have to verbalize this in another way. In essence, you can use this source, you can cite this, but then you need to explain and verbalize what this means from your perspective in your language. So you use the source, and you can even cite the source, but it cannot only be the source. What are you thinking? You know, and even if you might feel absolutely stupid saying it, as we often do, it's finding that integration. And that is not something that comes naturally. I mean, I'm still struggling with it, and I've been working a heck of a long time.
It feels to me, in a way, this opens the door. You mentioned AI. Yeah. So we've got the AI for academic integrity, and then we have the other AI, which is artificial intelligence. So from the one AI to the other AI, and like you say now, if my assessment still is asking a student, but what is your perspective? So it could be very well for that student to ask ChatGPT to provide my perspective, and then I just plonk that in. So how do we make sure that... Yeah, or how, maybe to rephrase it differently, how do you see the future for academic integrity with artificial intelligence in the room?
That's a nice question.
Yeah. So, Hanli, please jump in here as well, because we all have vested interest. You know, that is a difficult question for me on multiple levels. But let me start off by saying this. We all run the risk of becoming lazy. We become, I remember my mother was a librarian at a large university library. And there were some people, when they went over from that, you know, those hand boxes, the cabinets with the index cards. Yes, and you had to go and search, which was a great exercise in getting to know the Dewey Decimal System, by the way. But then they went over onto electronic catalogs. And I remember people saying, but people are not going to know how to find books. They're not going to be able to use this. Or they're going to miss things. The other thing is, I also remember when Wikipedia was created. Also from, you know, these discussions from the librarians, what are librarians going to do? Because now everyone can find the knowledge for themselves. But the first person I call is my mom and say, what keywords should I use again? You know, how should I phrase this?
Prompting.
Yes. So with every new student here, with every cohort, with every new tool, whatever that tool may be, whether it's technological in nature or otherwise, we run the risk of becoming lazy and letting the tool do it for you. Then you lose your capacity for critical engagement, which is in essence what makes us human in a large extent, from a certain perspective. So I think the one from a very high level, maybe philosophical point, is what we should be careful for and should remind students of is that these tools shouldn't make them lazy. It shouldn't make us lazy. We should engage and can engage with them, and they can be a helpful tool. I mean, once again, coming back to my example as a student where I still feel like I struggle to, I can integrate this knowledge, but I cannot necessarily verbalize it in my own words. It takes a lot of thinking and parsing in my head to do that. But suddenly having the freedom of, let's say, using something like ChatGPT, or chat PDF. I mean, I'm not saying people should use it, but I found it extremely helpful, not because it does the work for me. I still value the work that I add and the thinking that I add to that. but the critical impetus still lies with me to engage responsibly with the content, to ask the questions of this content is, who is saying this?
Mm-hmm.
What biases might lay behind this? What visible or invisible truths may be underlining this? We do that when we do research. We do that when we read normal books, or because that's constantly what you're asking yourself is also, who is this author? Who published this book? With what intention was it published? From what perspective was it published? That's what we do. We constantly also ask ourselves, what are our biases that we bring as researchers and lecturers to the content? I think the same principles apply when we work with these AI tools. Does it make it easier on a punitive level for some people to be dishonest, whatever that may mean? So to not value the other people's knowledge, to, if we look at that definition, so to not use it fairly, to to not be trustworthy because we cannot trust that what you have written is your own work, to not be responsible with someone else's content. Yes, that can happen, but that need not be the only case. So we need to equip ourselves and our students with the reminder that academic integrity and the values thereof stay key here, regardless of the tool you use. We just run more of a risk of becoming lazy and uncritical because it does become easier. So we all constantly have to ask ourselves, are we becoming complacent and thinking, I'm just letting this tool do what I have to do? I think, Hani, also this comes to assessment, or where we also get the question, and this once again touches upon academic integrity, what about letting AI mock assignments for a lecturer? Can be a fantastic time saver, but you know, what are the implications? What does that say about? I think we should not throw it out of the window. I think it is here, AI tools, but we need to constantly come back, maybe my golden thread, academic integrity. What are the values that we're trying to impart? And then how do we use those tools with value? Because I also just want to say, these tools don't have values in themselves, and they've been created by people with a different value system. So they also need to be scrutinized for their own academic integrity.
Mm. That's very well said to understand, because I think we can read values into them.
Mm.
If we want to, we can think they have the same values that we have.
Mm.
But I'm reminded as we're speaking to you, and we fast run out of time, I would have loved to have had the conversation about Turnitin still, because I think that is a big one. But I'm sitting here thinking that maybe one of our saving graces in higher education is going to be learning. We're learning institutions. Mm. We claim that we're a learning-centered institution. And going back to things you said earlier about students learning, I sometimes want us to pull back just a little bit and the students do not see every action they take as a final summative action, but just to have opportunity to tell them, okay, let's learn from that for the next one. And I think when we spoke to Delisha, that's such a beautiful example of exactly doing that in a game-based learning way. But the same for us.
Mm.
We need to relearn and unlearn certain things now in this new space, and not hold so fast to our truths, which is why I really like the idea of a values-based approach to academic integrity. Which puts a different spin on the interaction between assessment and academic integrity than if we go in more with a punitive approach to start off with, even though we need those.
And I also think it puts a whole different spin on the relationship between student and lecturer, student and their assessment, lecturer and the assessment, lecturer and the guidelines, because it starts from a different core. No one is the police necessarily from that starting point. No one is the judge with the gavel. We are people engaging in this world with a value set, and we start from there. You reminded me, Hanli, one of my pet peeves when people hear I work at Stellenbosch University is, you know, they're all very interested, and of course, multiple other aspects come to mind, political aspects that we should not touch upon today. But one of the other things is, you know, university is not life. You know, it's So I get that. I mean, yeah, totally understand that. We constantly also hear our graduates are not ready for the world out there. And I think part of that may be the structure which we apply to our learning, teaching, and assessment. Because what you've now mentioned is something that's once again coming back to a critical thing of life, is we need the chance to learn and relearn and unlearn. That is life. Otherwise, life would be very, very sad, personally, I think. But we don't necessarily build that in the way in which learning, teaching, and assessment takes place at a university. And I can strategically understand why. I can, on a day-to-day level, understand why. But perhaps we should also be asking ourselves, when we look at academic integrity, the question of what are we doing here? Perhaps just the whole way in which we are trying to get our students to the other side is not conducive for an academic integrity value system, or that might not be the way we're going to get them to be the graduates with the attributes we want. That maybe we are not really enabling through the system in its current way, because there are no opportunities to make these mistakes, to be human. With a caveat to say that we need to have processes and procedures in place when they do become problematic, when these mistakes, albeit intentional or not, become problematic to the academic integrity of the university, as well as the academic integrity of the content that we are trying to convey. Because we should also be mindful that the content itself is, knowledge itself is precious, and what we are trying to convey, we do that with earnest. So we're not saying not to do that earnestly, but maybe there is something about how we are trying to be human within higher education that is not necessarily correlated with how we are human as humans every day.
Ach, Margriet, unfortunately, our time is up. No. But yeah, there's still a lot to unpack. So yeah, hopefully we can ring it up again and take it further in another podcast. But for today, thank you so much. Thank you for framing this very important topic in the way that you have, and sharing your beautiful ideas and thoughts critically on this topic. And I think for me, one of the valuables standing out is again just how transformative its assessment can be such a valuable way of incorporating and weaving back in our teaching and learning, because it's all integrated when we really value our assessments, and when we perhaps reimagine and rethink the way that we assess with integrity ourselves, and think out of the box a bit. Yeah, let's keep the conversation going.
Thanks so much to both of you. It was lovely and not as nerve-wracking as I thought.
Beautiful.
Not at all. Thanks, Margriet.
And that's all for today. Thank you.